My name is Darren Brady, and I have spoken here at Seasons of Joy several times in the past, just been 3 years or so. Typically when I do talk, I'm a Torah teacher. That's kind of my calling. It works real good for me. I leave all the sidebar subjects to everybody else, with the exception of your children. I myself, personally, as a profession, I'm an illustrator. I'm a graphic designer, illustrator, and a lot of my work has been in the youth arena. So, if you have this gentleman right here when he was young, if he had Spider-Man action figures or X-Men action figures, I was the guy that did the boxes for your Spider-Man action figures. You know, a lot of the toys you had when you were a kid, I illustrated the boxes, I did comic books, I did a lot of this stuff, you know. And I Ertl rockets, you name it. About 2000, in our home church back in the day, well, that was far before 2000, my wife and I led the couples group. Now, this was a pretty large couples group. I mean, we'd have, you know, 50, 60 people at any one time. We did a discipleship class. And through this discipleship class, we found something pretty interesting, because what we did was we made the focus of this discipleship class not a topical focus. We made it a scriptural focus. And the whole key was to get husbands and wives to start studying the Bible together in context, in some form of plan. So you wouldn't just read two or three scriptures and have a discussion. You would go and read certain chapters and talk about it in context. This was kind of revolutionary for me and my wife, even, because what happened was, in order to teach something, you gotta first learn it, right? So the great thing about stepping into that role as a teacher, I had to have this stuff really down. My children were very young at the time, and so the focus on this was on family. And those that know my kids from my home congregation and stuff back in Kansas know that my kids are not average. They're above average people. And I'm very proud to say that. You know, a lot of people can list their accomplishments, you know, and they'll list how successful they are in their business. They'll list, you know, how successful they may be in their investments or their bank account, and you know, maybe their holdings and that kind of stuff. I have three of the most incredible daughters you've ever met, and they're not here. Not because they don't want to be here, but just because of the stage of life that they're at. You know, my oldest daughter, she got married a year ago. Her vacation was her wedding and her honeymoon. She could not get off the time for the work to come to the festival, because that's what their thing. But my middle daughter, she just had a baby, my first grandchild. I'm now a grandpa. It's pretty neat. I got a fella in the mix right now, which is something a man with three daughters really loves the thought of. And then my youngest daughter is in Oklahoma City going to college down there. All three of my daughters, however, are artists as well. My oldest is an interior designer, my middle daughter is a fashion designer, and my baby is an illustrator animation major in her senior year. So I did a few things right in the fact that my children followed in my footsteps professionally and spiritually in their religious walk. And the thing that was important that God really brought out to my attention early on was that the father is the head of the house, right? I'm responsible for the spiritual walk and the things that are taught to my children, okay? And it doesn't care whether you go to a church, a synagogue, or anything like that, because, you know, Jewish people do the same thing that Christian people do. They drive their kids to Sunday school. And they call it Sunday school. I mean, that's when they, at a synagogue, that's where they have the educational classes. When the kids go to learn their bar and bat mitzvah stuff and their Hebrew and all that stuff, it's on Sundays. Because their religious services will start on Friday night, they'll run all the way through Saturday, usually have onegs and different things going on Saturday evenings, and Sundays when they get into the serious parts of study and they actually have school. Okay? So, most Jewish fathers are like a lot of Christian fathers. You know, they're busy doing their thing, and they think, well, I took my kids to synagogue every day, or I took my kids to church, you know. They could ask the pastor, they could ask the youth pastor, you know, and this and that and the other thing. And most fathers are just absent in the spiritual walk of their kids. Or they'll leave it up to their moms. How many of you know that when a woman has to step into the role that her husband should be feeling, that the house is out of order? Right? Things just don't run smooth like they're supposed to. If the dad's lazy and he just doesn't want to do things, if he doesn't want to step up and oversee the bills, for instance, you know, and he says, well, I just give her my paycheck, let her take care of it. You know? Things get messed up, whose fault's that? You know? He's got an obligation. Torah tells us he's got an obligation. Now in our modern day world, our society's all flip flopped, it's all backwards, it's all screwed up. One of the things about our society that's really screwed up is the fact that you've got to break down the traditional family. One of the things that bothers me the most is the new fall lineup on TV and the way they cram these new shows that want to change the definition of what a family is down our throat. They want to brand the new normal. It's not very normal to me. And you know what? Those children that are raised in similar situations, that's not going to be very normal for them. That's really quite sad. That said, many people will find themselves in situations and circumstances, since our society is at a point of degradation, that may not be their first choice. You know, sometimes women are going to be single parents, and they're going to be raising these kids by themselves. Sometimes fathers are single parents. I have a friend that found himself into that situation. Then you have blended families, and then you have non-families. These are people that share an address. The kids are basically on their own. You know, the lights are on. Everything else is kind of their own responsibility. This is a sad situation, a sad stage of circumstance. One of the things that I believe has happened in our society is we've kind of neutered fathers. We make fun of guys, you know? And when I was a kid, you'd see they'd make fun of the dads, you know, he'd have a striped shirt and plaid polyester pants, and they'd, you know, like he didn't care. I was just a dad, he don't care. He's not supposed to be coordinated, he's not supposed to have it all figured out. He's supposed to be goofy and doofy. Well, male bashing humor is pretty common in our society, right? It's pretty much anti-guy. In a lot of ways, where they make us all look like a bunch of Sunday football, couch potato guys that paint our faces and jump up and pat our tummies and go, ooh, you know, like a bunch of apes, knuckle dragging, stupid, ignorant apes. Well, what's that do? That just removes their authority in their house. Okay, when they teach that to your kids all over the place in the schools and in society, you know, that kid. They remove the respect that a father is due. Now, respect has to be earned to a certain point, a certain degree. A father has to step up and do it. We've got a lot of social engineering going on in our world. That's another thing that's kind of bothersome. Anybody that's had their children in the public school system, or even some of the private school systems, they've got an agenda. And the reason why your kids come home with 14 hours worth of homework every night is because they're too busy teaching them their ethics to teach them what they actually went to school to learn. My wife was talking to her cousin. She's got two first graders. And they come home with homework. First grade. They're sending them home with homework. Why? Because they're socially engineering all the rest of them. Oh, play nice. You can't do this. You can't do that. That child needs some Ritalin. He's got too much spirit. You know, come on. When I was a little boy, I had a lot of spirit. I jumped out of trees, man. You know, I broke more bones than you know, that's what boys do. They're high strung. That's why we have sports, right? Now let's give them video games, dope them up on, you know, corn syrup and make them all chubby. And I can't talk too much about that right now. So a lot of people assume that right now, and then sad part of this is true, that the mom is the biggest spiritual influence in a child's life. The problem with that is when you look at the statistics, if a mom comes to faith and takes the role as a spiritual head of the household, only 19% of those children are going to follow in her footsteps. How many people have I met? And see, I'm a guy's guy. You know, I can go talk to people and I can walk up to... I tell you what, there probably isn't a 15-year-old boy in this place that I can walk up to and start talking, And he'd sit there and carry on conversation with me. I mean, I have a natural in at that thing. I've taught high school, I've taught college. You know, I have a natural connection with your kids. And that's a powerful thing, right? I mean, it's an honor, really. Because I know when I was that kid, I didn't have that in my life. A little background on that thing. You know, a lot of people have known me over the years that have known me 15, 20 years. I'll say, man, you must have had great parents. I love my parents. They're not stupid people. But as far as being great parents, no. My real dad, my biological father, took off when I was 4 years old. I became a man at 4 years old. And this is how I became a man. My mom, who I love very much, she's in a total emotional roller coaster, right? Totally bipolar. Could not handle being abandoned with two kids. I was 4 years old. I could count money before I could read because I was sent to the store all the time to get stuff. I became the man of the house before I went to kindergarten. That's kind of a weird thing to do to a kid. And I didn't know any different. I remember, I'm one of these few people, I have a memory, I can almost remember coming out of the womb. Right? I really do. I can remember my mom's older sister, my Aunt Marilyn, coming in one day, and my mom says, hey Darren, come in here, she gives me some money. Says, run up to the store and bring me this, and the other thing. And my aunt goes, what? Because the store wasn't on the corner. It was 7-8 blocks that direction. You know? And she ripped into her. Don't you send that baby, you know, all the way up there and tell him this, all this stuff, and you know. And I was like, oh, I do it all the time. Didn't think anything about it. When I was older, she said, you know, it's the darnest thing I've ever seen. They could have dropped you in the middle of New York City. You'd found your way home. Probably. So I had an absent father. He was gone. Poof. I met him again when I was 30 years old. This gentleman, he's a nice guy. I mean, we get along okay. I mean, I don't hate him or nothing. I got rid of any angst that I might have had as a young man, but he just missed it. He missed the whole thing, you know? Now he kind of looks back and he'd like to be there a little bit, but he still doesn't know how. Because I haven't withheld my children from him as a grandparent. I haven't told my children all the little, you know, things or anything. That I've given him full rights as a grandparent to step into that role. He can't do that either. You know, he just hasn't. I like him. I don't call him dad. I don't call him father. I call him by his first name because he's an acquaintance. And that's unfortunate. You know, it's his loss. Okay, so I learned to be what I never had. And so many times we have that in our walk, right? You know, how many of you were raised in a Hebraic roots type Jewish household or anything along these lines? Huh? No, it was a path. We God revealed something to us. We grew in that area and we walked it out and we learned it. Boom, 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 boom. Right? I don't want to drop my kids in the middle of life without any proper instruction, and they have to go through the same thing. My mom did get remarried when I was in grade school. My stepfather was a nice guy. He didn't know how to be a dad either. He never had any kids of his own. But he was a nice guy. He was good to my mom, you know. He treated me decent. He didn't give me direction one way or the other, though. See? That's a bad thing to do to a young boy. You know why? Because if they don't have any limits, they can get themselves in a lot of trouble. And I didn't get in too much trouble. I mean, I had certain things, you know, but I wasn't the nicest kid on the block either. You know? And I feel bad about that. One time my wife went to work at it she was selling cars. And this kid that I grew up with started working at this place. You know, I lived in a town about 45 miles away from the town I grew up in, and when he goes, oh, you're from Chanute, maybe you know my husband. And she told him my name, and he goes, that's your husband? And she goes, yeah. Because everybody thought, oh, Darren's a pretty nice, easygoing dude. And she goes, yeah, that's my husband. And he goes, He was the most sadistic kid I ever met in my life. And she goes, what did you do to that kid when you were little? I said, well, I don't know. I said, let me think. Well, I know he had a lisp. Oh, I was pretty mean. I was, you know, but I didn't know any better. I didn't have anybody slap me upside the head and say, don't talk to people that way. Don't be that way. It was meant for yourself. You're dropped in the middle of it, and it's survival of the fittest. You know, you do what you do. And that's unfortunate. Don't do that to your kids in their spiritual walk. Okay? Because my daughters can walk into any church and synagogue. Here's the biggest thing. We homeschool our kids. Okay? Because they weren't teaching them anything. Nothing we liked. And so my oldest daughter was just hitting sixth grade. My middle daughter was hitting fourth grade. And my baby was hitting second. And I got into an argument with the principal of my middle daughter's school. Because the year before, they were doing this social engineering. She was in the advanced math class and got straight A's because I paid a lot of attention to what my daughters were doing at all times. And all of a sudden, she's in fourth grade and she's in the lower level. They were doing this three-tier deal. You know, they had kids right on grade level, and they had kids that were working advanced and kids that were working below. And they weren't doing A's and B's and C's and D's because that would give people, messes with their self-esteem. And we were doing 1-2s and 3s and 4s and 5s at the time. You know? And we went to the parent-teacher conference. And we're sitting down with this teacher from my daughter's school, and he was telling us that, well, you know, she's in the lower level math, but she's doing really good. She's getting an A. I said, what? Lower level? What are you talking about, Willis? bing, bing, switches went off. They didn't tell us this. They just did it. And I said, look, she was in the advanced last year, and she got an A. So I said, if she's getting an A, I want her moved at least up to grade point. Oh, well, see, you know, we can't do that. It's just, you know, he gave me all these excuses and this whining and crying and all this junk. And I said, well, who do I need to talk to fix this situation? So I went to the principal. So I sat down with the principal and blah, 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 blah. And I said, look, she's getting an A. This is nothing to her. At least challenge her. If she needs a little extra work, she needs some tutoring, we'll do it. Well, see, you just have to understand, Mr. Brady, that some kids are destined to work at McDonald's. Wrong thing to say. So I went to the superintendent, which he didn't know, used to be my gym teacher in the town I grew up in. I know him. He lived two blocks from my house. I walked over to his house. I said, we're going to talk about this. And then he went into all this thing about how this they're doing this social engineering, they're doing all this stuff, and it's really out of his hands. I said, I guess I'll just go get my girls. And literally that day, we made a decision as a husband and a wife. Yes?
Would you define social engineering?
Yeah, the city school board for our USD 413 had a list of priorities that they wanted to teach the kids beyond the general knowledge, general ed type courses. A lot of this has to do with playground behavior, you know, no hitting, no this, you can't, you know, it's like some of the anti-bullying stuff that they do now, but they take it to such an extreme that sometimes it clashes with people's religious and ethnic beliefs. I guess is the easiest way to do it. Plus, they were experimenting with our kids. So we lived in a town that was no longer going to utilize the neighborhood school system. So even though our home was two blocks from the school on the west side of town, that was a huge elementary school, by the way, they were now doing learning centers instead of neighborhood schools. So they were shoving a town of 15,000 people. All the kids had to be bused clear to one location in town, and they would have, you know, 8 to 10 kindergarten classrooms, same with the first grade and second. So that went through K through second. Here they had third and fourth in a different old grade school deal, and here they were doing fifth grade, and then they were shoving them into middle school at sixth grade. And these towns, you know, a few years earlier when I was in school, because I was a young father, were doing 7th to 9th, because we were doing junior high at that time, not middle school. So that was part of their thing. And I knew I was a businessman in town, and I knew a lot of the people in town. And the lady who was the head of the school board and later went on to be at a state level there in Kansas was a client of mine. And so we had several discussions about this because I like to discuss stuff. And so I just didn't agree with the whole thing they were doing. It was, you know, and we were involved parents, you know. I was softball coach. I was, you know, we were doing the brownie thing. We were doing everything. You know, we were right there the whole time. And we were involved. And we thought, because I felt my wife was raised in a private Christian school and I was raised in a public school. And I felt that my kids needed the social interaction on top of the educational aspects. And I found out there are other ways to do that. Because we pulled our kids out at that age, and we educated them ourselves. We had several families that we found that were doing homeschooling. So there was a homeschool group and all that stuff going. And I saw, the good and the bad. I saw examples of great homeschool parents that were doing everything the right way. And I saw the other ones that said they were doing homeschooling, but they weren't doing anything. And the kids could barely write their names. So I saw them both. And so you, it's a responsibility when you take that on. My wife had to quit her job, but we had to make some lifestyle changes because we were both, you know, turning and burning and paying the bills. Kansas is a state, although the educational system is relatively good. You know, it's what, number 8 to 10 in the nation as far as the quality of education. The income level is very low. The jobs that existed in these small towns and communities when I was a boy are gone. There's no unions. There's no railroads. There's no oil field work. These guys are working for $8 to $10 an hour. And I would say presently 70% of the kids in the public school system in that entire area of the state are on some form of public assistance. If they're not getting free lunch, they're getting food stamps at home, they're getting supplemental, because people just don't make enough money to live. They just don't. So it's a rough, rural America is getting that way. Period. In the Midwest, it's really degrading, and people are forced to go to the cities. I now live in Chicago. You know, after spending 17 years in a small town, which is half the size it used to be. It's 8,700 people from 15,000, you know, 10 years ago. Yeah, it's the present state of this thing. But back to my thing, the research shows, though, that when a father comes to faith and takes the role as a spiritual head of a household, that 93% of the time the children follow in his footsteps, and the whole family will then go to church or synagogue and stick with it the majority of the time. That's interesting. And how important is it to bring the next generation into faith and spiritual development? The thing for me was, you know, I didn't want my kids just to maybe aspire. I'm a pretty studious person. So when I get in and I want to learn something, I study it out pretty in depth and develop it quite heavily. Not everybody's that driven. I have three daughters. We homeschooled them. We had the same curriculum. We had the same, and I had three totally different outcomes. My firstborn, she's the pleaser. My firstborn went to college a year early. She's 17 years old. Went to college. Took the ACT. Aced that. She was valedictorian when she graduated with her associate's degree, and then she left the little local Kansas community college that she got her associate's degree. She went to Chicago, went to the Art Institute. Okay, she's valedictorian at the Art Institute too, and so we did something right, you know, something stuck, you know. she's an interior designer. She had to take physics. She had to take probabilities. She had to take, you know, a lot of these things. And I'm like, really, for interior design? My middle daughter, however, kid gifted. She's all heart. My oldest daughter, I said, has my brain. She has my brain. She has my mind. My middle daughter has my heart. That kid, when she was a baby, she smiled, she lit up the whole room. She's just natural, right? Anything to do with dance, athletics, whatever, pure grace. When she was in T-ball, she hit that ball. If she hit it off of the tee, it was a home run because she'd go, she was there. She could run like a gazelle, just awesome. But could have cared less. I mean, just totally could have cared less. And it's like, it's okay. I like my Barbie dolls. She was a girly, girly girl. Okay? Makeup. And that kid changed 15 times a day. That's what she did, you know? She's a fashion designer. She, too, went to college a year early. We did the local community college for a period of time. It didn't work for her. Her first semester, we knew that this wasn't going to work. If she stayed there, going to the community college, because since it was a field of study, that she, it was gen ed classes, and she didn't care. She put no effort into it, and we figured that if she stayed one more semester, she'd drop and she'd never go back. So we said, what do you want to do? And she told us, and we, okay, we'll find a way to help you do that. And that being, you know, being a small town business person, you know, I paid my bills, but I didn't have $100,000 in my child's education account to pay for their college. And the Art Institute isn't cheap. So, but I filled out every paper I had to fill out. I jumped through every hoop to get her the loans, the whatever she needed to get to where she wanted to go. That's the best you can do sometimes as a parent, right? I mean, you can only do what you can do. But do it. You know, help them. If your kids are going to be great, they're going to, you want them to go from where you're at, your platform. You've reached a certain platform in your life, right? And it's not been easy. We all come from someplace. And we've gotten to a certain point. I don't want my kids to have to start back at the beginning. I want them to go from where I'm at and go forward. I don't want my kids to know as much Hebrew as I do. I want them to know 15 times more Hebrew than I do. And I'm pretty good with my Hebrew. I really am. We've been doing this walk for 14 years. I've been teaching Torah for 13 of those 14 years. Okay, so in the yearly cycle, the whole nine yards. I've been teaching liturgy for 10 of those. Okay? And I didn't have a synagogue 2 hours of the closest synagogue. So I couldn't go there to learn it. So I had to learn it from books the hard way. So, you know. When a dad leaves the spiritual development to a mom or a teacher or a youth pastor, substituting their own role as the spiritual head of the household, the kids grow up confused about how life works. They do, you know? It's disconnected. If your walk in God is not lived out in all the other areas of your life, if it's just a Sabbath or a Sunday thing, then guess what? It won't have that big of an effect on your kids. It has to be a 24/7. You know how I can tell you it's 24/7? My wife says, I'm not sending you to the store anymore. You know why? She goes, because I send you to the store and you get home an hour and a half later. Well, I can't help it. So-and-so walked up to me and had a question. So-and-so said this to me in the parking lot. So-and-so said this to me at the register. You know? Because that's what the way it was. You know? And, you know, ask me, I'll talk to you. It's not a problem. you know. But, you know, some fathers, they just, you know, Sunday's a Sunday thing. Our Greek mindset separates everything into categories, right? We go over here and this is my career, and these are my friends, and this is my church, fellowship, whatever, and then this is my hobbies. And they'll go in and they'll shut the door to the rest of the parts of their lives. How many people you know that they got a workshop? And they go in and they shut the door. And they close that door and nobody comes in there and bothers them because they're in the middle of doing something. Right? If we compartmentalize our lives and we keep everything so separated, you know, some people eat that way all the time. Now, I don't like to take all my food and put it in a big mess either. But some people will compartmentalize their food on their plate, you know. That's why we have those plates with the little sections and everything. There are certain things I don't like to get on, you know, gravy on, but, you know, it's life's not that way. But fathers, a lot of times, will do that. Men, guys in general, because we're wired different. We're practical. Likewise, you shouldn't force your kids into religious studies in a boot camp drill sergeant type style. Some people can do that. My wife has a tendency sometimes to be like that. She's got too many Germans on her side of the family. You know, everybody's got a German last name, and her grandma, you know, and all that stuff. There's nothing wrong with that. There's just times where she's very black and white, you know, and you have to present God in a way that's not so rigorous that they run the other direction. In fact, Paul actually talks about this. This is an interesting passage of Scripture. If you've got your Bibles and you want to follow along, Ephesians chapter 6. And I'm going to be reading out of the Stern, so it's got Hebraic terminology if you're reading along and think. Now, it's interesting because in Ephesians chapter 6, we see churches all the time, they use this. This is the armor of God passages, right? Ephesians chapter 6, and they apply this to all kinds of stuff. But they seldom apply it to their families. Where are you? He's a little guy. Yep, there you go. Children. This is the first thing it starts with. First one. Children. What you should do in union with the Lord is obey your parents. For that is right. Honor your father and your mother. That is the first commandment that embodies a promise. So that it may go well with you and you will live long in the land. One of the ten, right? And then it says right after that, fathers, don't, and I like the word Stern chooses here, translates, says don't irritate your children.
That one the most.
Yeah.
Fathers, don't provoke
your children. Yeah. Don't irritate your children and make them resentful. Instead, raise them with the Lord's kind of discipline and guidance. The Lord's kind of discipline and guidance. That's an important thing. I had three beautiful daughters, and I had to discipline them. And there are sometimes you just they did something that just really made you mad, and you just had to just go calm down a little bit, and then come back because, you know, it's not right to just obliterate your children with your words and your hand, and just, you know. So you got to discipline in the right spirit. Yeah.
He also said that when he didn't want to do something.
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Then it says, likewise, it keeps following this. This is that 24/7 walk. You want to walk in the armor of God? Live it 24/7. Because it says, slaves, obey your masters with the same fear, trembling, and self-heartedness as that which you obey the Messiah. It should say employees. Honor your employers. Because that's really the concept of the old world slavery to the modern day slavery. Slaves just really didn't own things. You know, they worked for somebody else, and their provision came from those people. They were servants. It's, you know, it's a different world. You got to understand the geopolitical aspects of it. Serving only when they are watching you, and some people do that. I worked in a grocery store as a kid, and I got one of my best friends a job at this grocery store. And the guy I worked for had ran that grocery store for 25 years. And many of you will see me walking around the hall, and if we make eye contact, I always go, "Hi, how are you doing today?" That was programmed into me as a 15-year-old boy working in that grocery store. As Bob says, if you walk past somebody and you don't ask them how they're doing, and if they need help finding something or something, he says, "I'll tell you to hit the door." Because he knew that it wasn't the best store in town, it didn't have the best prices. His whole thing existed on service. He didn't let a lady carry a gallon of milk to her car by herself. It wasn't, you know, You get that for her. You insist, you know. You unload their carts. You do this. You do that. It was all big on service. And that's what made his store. And he had a heck of a business because of it. You know, I learned a lot. But I got a friend hired. And boy, when the boss was there, oh, he's there working away. And he's all, hey, Bob. He's being all nice to the boss and all that stuff. The minute the boss is gone, oh, I'm going to the bathroom. He wasn't seen for 2 hours. He finding me be in the back room goofing around, throwing his box knife at a box, poof, sticking it into the side of whatever. What are you doing? You know? I thought, man, I'm never getting that knuckleheaded job again. You know, it was just a bad deal, you know? You never would have thought I'd known this guy since we were in second grade. When you're born in the hospital and you graduate from the high school, you know? Okay. Do it all times, even when they're not looking. Work willingly as slaves, as people who do serving not merely human beings, but as if you're doing it to the Lord. Remember that whoever does good work, whether he be a slave or a free man, will be rewarded by the Lord. And masters, treat your slaves the same way. Now, this is something we need in our society too. Because even though a lot of people are goofing around, they don't really want to work, we don't have a lot of employers treating their people with value. Right? And they don't care as long as they get the cheapest guy in there because they're only counting the beans. How many of you have been in a Walmart where you actually see the manager? His name's on every receipt. Can you put a face to that name? I remember that grocery store that I worked at, and it was a Union Safeway grocery store. Bob was always in that store. Everybody knew who Bob was. I could find Bob stocking shelves at times because Bob was there for the people, the employees and the customers and everybody else. He managed, okay? A father has to manage, okay? And masters, treat your slaves the same way. Don't threaten them. Remember that in heaven, both you and they have the same master. And he has no favorites. Finally, grow up powerful in union with the Lord and in union with His mighty strength. Use all the armor and weaponry that God provides so that you will be able to stand against the deceptive tactics of the adversary. For we do not struggle against human beings, but against rulers and authorities and cosmic powers in governing this dark place. Then you know all about this. It talks about the belt buckle of truth and the shoes of peace. And those are the garments of the high priest. Have you guys heard that teaching? The breastplate of righteousness. Right? The helmet of salvation. What's it say on that turban? It's a crown, and it says, "Kadosh HaYahweh, holy to the Lord." Okay. If you were a priest to God, you would act different than you would if you were the trash collector, right? You'd feel an obligation. Well, in your house, you're a priest. In Hebrew, the word for altar is mishpach. Okay? Same word for table. You have a table in your home. Your family should sit around it. And when it does, your words should be words of edification. You should not only be feeding their bodies, you should be feeding their spirit. Whether that kid's sitting there doing their homework, or they're sitting there coloring in a coloring book, you should come in and go, "Hey, what are you doing? Tell me about this, you know?" Give them some encouragement. Don't criticize too much. You know, help them when they ask for help. But, you know, being a professional artist and having three young girls who went into art-related fields, you know, my daughters would show me things. They just started illustration courses or this and that. And they go, "Well, what do you think, Dad?" And I go, "Well, it looks good." And I'd help them and I'd point out the things I liked about it. And then they got to where, after a while, they would ask me what I didn't like about it. Early on, they didn't want to hear that. They just needed the pat on the back. So I had to discern, as a father, whether they were asking for my opinion to help improve the drawing, or if they were asking for encouragement to keep going. Because three different daughters, three different minds, work three different ways. My youngest daughter, if something gets too critical, she's done. It's like, forget it then. I'm not going to mess with it. My oldest daughter, she'd go back and redo it 15 times until she had it perfect. You know? My middle daughter's like, I'm not going to work on it that hard. You know? Every single one of them have turned into really excellent artists. Really strong in their illustration parts. Okay. Now, this table, like I was talking about, is the mishpach in your home, right? It should be holy. The things that happen around that table should be holy. In the olden days, in Little House on the Prairie, they had basically two kinds of furniture in their house. They had a table, and they had beds. They didn't have a living room. They lived around that table. The classic home people lived around. Everybody remember the Brady Bunch TV show? Okay. Three-bedroom house. These weren't poor people. They had a housekeeper. They had a cook. They had six children. How many of us today would think ourselves wealthy if we lived in a three-bedroom house and we had six kids? Oh, I've only got a three-bedroom house. We're just tripping all over each other. Remember the bunk beds, you know, and all that? And it was a big thing when Greg got to move into the attic. You know? Well, our kids don't understand the value of stuff anymore. We don't help them achieve things. We just give them stuff. And they don't take care of it. My brother-in-law came to live with us when he was 15 years old. His mother was having problems with him. And she sent him to our house. It happened quite a bit. With my wife's younger, because there's a big age discrepancy between my wife and her other older sister, and then she was 12 or 13 when her parents started having kids, and they had three more. Bang, bang. So her youngest sister is like 4 years older than our daughter, our firstborn. So he came to live with us. And I bought that boy a $50 watch for his birthday. Something of value. I'm going to teach this how to take care of something, blah, 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 blah. It was gone in a week. He didn't even have clues what he did with it. Could have cared less. 6 months later, he's moving back. You know, he's all... And he had done pretty decent. And he's tearing the room apart. I go, what are you looking for, Caleb? He's looking for my watch. I go, what watch is that? He said, I bought a watch last week for $12. And I can't find it. Well, I gave you a $50 watch when you got here. But I bought this one. You know? Let them achieve things. Let them get certain things on their own. Don't give them too much. They don't understand the value of it. He wanted that $12 watch because he had paid for it. See? That's a victory. That's a good thing. Now, there's three things you can do as you become a priest and king. Now, a lot of people say, well, what's that mean? You know, do I have to have services in my house constantly? You know, start with the Sabbath. Here's what happens around the dinner table in my house on Sabbath. On the dinner table of my house Sabbath, when we first started doing Sabbath, we had no clues of what it was. We just knew it was Saturday and you're supposed to rest. So our idea of the Sabbath at the time was we pull the plug on the TV, pull the plug on the telephone, shut the door, put a nice little note. It says, dear friends, unless you have an urgent need, the Brady family is observing a day of rest and prayer. Please come back at another time. Unless you have an urgent need. And that's what we did. We would read, we would talk, we'd just kind of hang around, snack foods, whatever. That was Sabbath at the Brady house. Then we started learning things. We started walking in. We started doing a Sabbath meal on Friday nights. I started getting in there. I would read these prayers. I would bless my daughters. Oh, we took it a step further. I decided I would figure out my daughter's names, because names are important in Hebrew, right? I'd figure out my daughter's names and what they mean in Hebrew. And then I started blessing my daughters with that. My oldest daughter's name's Christine. She was named after my wife's sisters. We took each one of their middle names, and she's Christine Elizabeth Ann Brady. So since she has two middle names, all the others have two middle names. And then they felt left out. But Christine, in Hebrew, is equivalent to Bat-Yah. Bat-Yah, which is the daughter of God, daughter of Yah. See, Bat-Yah. Okay? So when I prophesy over my daughter, I say, may God make you like the daughter of Yahweh. When I prophesy, my next one, may God make you the prophetess of Adonai, because her name's Cassandra. Cassandra's a Greek name. It means a seer, a prophetess, a person who can see. And my youngest, her name is Carrie. May God make you the strength, Nessa, of Elohim. So they each have a Hebrew equivalent, right? That's pretty neat. And then I sing the priestly blessing over them, and I tell them how great they are, and we sit there, we have this service, and I tell them who their God is, what He's promised to do for them. Here's a single one of my children that doesn't know their relationship and where they stand with God. They know what He expects of them. They know what He will reward them with if they follow in His ways. I don't have a problem getting my kids to come to Passover. The biggest problem I have at Passover is keeping that intimate Passover for my family. Right? Passover is not an evangelical thing. I believe that Passover is the fulfillment of the commandment to teach your sons what God has done for you. Right? You don't do that in a room full of 150 people. And then your kids just happen to be there. You do that in your home with your children right there and all the special beings being explained out to them. These services that may seem tradition are powerful. Okay? You can pick and choose all you want on how you want to walk in those things. But I'm telling you, the blessings of the Sabbath in my household have become strong. And the interesting thing is, you know, that you have the blessing after the meal. You have the short form in a lot of books, and you have the long form. Nobody in my house wants to read the short form. And then they argue about who gets to read certain passages. Oh, that's the one I want to read. Oh, that's the one I like. My middle daughter loves the last one, the Song of Ascent. Young lions lack hunger. You know, she likes to read that one. But then they talk about how a righteous man will not be forsaken. She loves that part. I like the part where it talks about the Holy Shabbat and we bask in the reflection of the Shekinah and talking about the world to come. Because that's my fond part. Everybody has their piece of that. But my kids can almost recite it word for word without the book now. That's pretty neat. It comes alive to them. Each time you do it, it gets more and more intimate. It becomes a point of walk. It has to be a heartfelt thing. The festivals are the same way. There's a three-step process in Hebrew, and I'm going to hurry because I know I don't have a lot of time. I want to get these points to you, okay? There's a three-step process on how you can go from where you're at now and get there. Okay? This is, in Hebrew, they call this tikkun. Anybody familiar with tikkun? This is a good one. Tikkun, it's simple. Tikkun midot is the first step. Tikkun midot means fix yourself. Work on you. People come in, they go, I want somebody to change my husband. I want somebody to change my this, my that, my kids. Change yourself first. Change the way you deal with them. There was this lady at the local Walmart that my wife used to say, man, I don't know, that woman's just never happy. I hate going to her checkout line because she just looks at you like, click, 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 click. I said, well, maybe you ought to be polite to her and see. Maybe she's just having a really bad day. So my wife made up her mind that she was going to start, every time she went in there and that lady was checking out for her, no matter what her state of mind was, she's going to say, how are you doing today? And she learned that lady's name from her name tag. And now when we go back to visit in the town we lived in for years and we see that woman, she tells us all about her kids, all about her family. She's like an old friend. Those walls that, you know, if she's having a bad day and Wendy walks in, oh, Mrs. Brady, and they start having a conversation. How are you? How are your daughters? You know, and blah, 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 blah. I've never once met her outside of Walmart. Never once. But she's a friend. Because we chose to make it that way. You can choose how you react and how you treat people, and it will change the way they act. Okay? Tikkun. Tikkun midot, you have to start with yourself. Then you move to the next stage. Tikkun mishpatim. Work on your family. Okay? Make changes in your house. You know where your points of service are weak. You know where things are out of line. Maybe you guys have that TV on too much. Maybe you guys never sit down and talk about anything. Make the time. Start instituting a few changes. Okay? Start doing. You don't have to tell everybody you're doing it. You just start doing it. It'll take care of itself. Okay? Then, tikkun mishpacha. Mishpacha. Mishpahah. That's transliteration, so yeah, that helps. Tikkun is Tikkun. It's a common Jewish term. Finally, you have the third and final stage of this. This is tikkun olam. This is changing your world, repairing your world. What happens is, once you have a nice, healthy, functioning family, it affects the world around them. The community starts to change. Your sphere of influence expands. Guess what? When we lived in this little town, I wasn't the wealthiest guy in town. I wasn't this, but if I needed a tire, I could get a tire. I didn't have to have a dollar in my pocket. If I needed my car fixed, I could get my car fixed. I had people that were my friends that would take care of me and take care of my needs, whatever I needed. And all I had to do was let them know, hey man, my car's broken down, I'm stuck, can you help me? Oh sure, I'll be right there. I had a brother go and he'd go pick up a trailer, he'd come over here. I had a 66 Ford pickup I bought for $200 from a farmer in a field. That was my work truck. Because the nice vehicle was the van we took the girls and everybody around in. So I was a sign painter and doing all this stuff and doing that locally to supplement my illustration work that I did on national scale. And those people, when they needed a sign and didn't have the money, I fixed them up. You know, it worked. We were a community. We helped one another. I go back, those people are still my friends. They ask me about my children. Oh, you got a grandson. That's awesome, you know. Boom. So you can do this stuff. It's nice. And there are many of these people are no longer just acquaintances. They're family. They're family tighter than some of your blood. You know? Okay, now, in your actual house, there's five little things you can do, five steps, to start instituting some changes. Okay, the other one was all about you working on you. This is you doing some things in your home. Keep the Sabbath. Okay, bless your children, prophesy over them, tell them how great they are, what they're going to do in the future. One of the things we're going to have in the Torah study tomorrow is the blessings upon the tribes of Israel from Moses. Moses was not only their teacher, not only their lawgiver, not only their king, but he was a father to Israel. Right? He brought them out of Egypt and he taught them for 40 years along the way. And at the end, he did the same thing Jacob did to his sons. He blessed them and he told them how great they were and he prophesied a good future for them. Give your kids something to look forward to. Help them with their goals. Speak life into them. Be an edifier. Okay, build them up. I bless my wife. One of the best things about our relationship, we've been married for 24 years. This next March will be 25 years of marriage. Okay, we have a better relationship now than we did when we were 19 and 18 year old kids, and I couldn't see anything but her. Okay. Because we do this stuff together. Okay? I bless my wife. I read the Proverbs 31 woman. It is okay if she has to work. You do what you do, but show her she's a righteous woman. Tell her what God, show her God's standard. And this is something that's left out of a lot of Sabbathadors, but is an excellent thing that needs, as a man, sometimes they have their wives read this. Read Psalms 112 for the man. This is the psalm of a righteous man. He lends to the poor. He gives to those who are in need. When he has a problem, he has no lack of help. It goes and it talks about what a righteous man is. Once you know that, you know it. You can count on it. Life's not so difficult if you don't have anything to fear. Okay, and then start looking forward to the Sabbath. We got to the point where we'd be talking about earlier in the week, oh, what are we going to do this Sabbath? That's the one time of the week we'd have dessert. What kind of special thing are we going to make? What are we going to do? It becomes special. We would make a point there for a while. It's like our girls, when they got to be at a certain age, we'd make a double batch of challah. And we would find somebody to give those extra loaves of bread to. And it didn't matter who they were. They'd run down the street. Hey, I've never given one to that neighbor. Hey, guess what? My daughters are baking bread. Would you guys like a loaf of bread for you and your family? It's really good stuff. You know? Boy, it's amazing what happens in your neighborhood when you do that. You know? It's amazing. Just a loaf of bread. Simple thing. Okay, second thing. Let your person know you're the same person Sunday through Friday that you are on Shabbat. And the same values that you hold on Shabbat, the same things that you talk about, the same things you do. What's Moses say? What's the ve'ahavta? You know? Teach them diligently to your children when you wake up, when you lie down, when you walk along the way. Whatever you're doing. The word of the Lord is to be on you. It's nothing for me to be standing in the middle of someplace and we have a long discussion about God or some passage of Scripture. And it could just be a question. And then, you know what? You don't even have to know the answer. I go, oh no, well let's check that out. You know? You do it together. Partner up. You don't have to have all the answers. That's the cool part about it. But you can find them. Consider this, and the third part is consider these spiritual activities, these things in your life, as essential. Make them a no matter what. Right? Don't just ditch the Sabbath because your favorite show's now on Saturday nights. Or Friday nights. You know? There's the internet. You got no excuse. TiVo, whatever. If you're that into TV, come on. You know? Put a little effort into it. Work around it. Sabbath's important. Sanctify it. Set it apart. It's the very, very, very first thing in Scripture God calls holy. The first word of the use, holy, in Scripture is when He's talking about the Sabbath. He's not talking about anything else. He's not talking about the garden. He's not talking about the tree of life. He's not talking about anything. He talks about Sabbath. He calls it holy. Okay? Number four. Make sure that everyone in your family understands that the work they do daily, is good work and it's God's work. You want to teach your children humility? You want to teach them to interact with people? You put a value on the work that other people do. I know my mailman by name. I ask him how he is and how his family is. The guy that comes on my trash truck, I speak to that man because you know what? He takes my garbage. He keeps my backyard from stinking. He's got a very important job. The mechanic has a very important job. Every one of those people have a value and they are interesting people if you'll take the time to meet them and appreciate them. You teach your children to appreciate everybody at what they do because without those people, society doesn't work. In a community, in a fellowship, if everybody doesn't do their part, it lacks. It's not whole. And God has a gift for every single person and a value. You know, there are people who God sent to your congregation because you need music. And they know it. Recognize that. I treated every person in our congregation just the same way I treated my children. I encouraged them, I edified them, and no matter what level they were in their knowledge or their whatever, and you have to look for the best in every single person. God has given them a gift. God has given them something special. The rabbis say that every single living, breathing human being has a unique understanding of one section of the Torah. There's something about the Torah, the Word of God, the Book of Life, that they know more than anybody else in the world. And their reason for being here is that. To share, to do, to bring light into this world. How are they going to do that if all you guys get on the other side, or away from that guy? You know, come on. You don't know that guy. You don't know what he's been through. Take a little time, find out. Okay? Be an uplifter, be an edifier, all walk of life. And then the last, but not least important, is teach your children to be givers. Teach them to help. Teach them to help each other. Teach them that you're not invincible and there's times you need help. Huh? Sometimes we don't want anybody to think bad of us. You don't want to tell your children, your personal whatever, that you're going through any kind of a struggle or any of that. Baloney business. You know? Be a real person to your children. Don't give them some fake facade that they don't think they can live up to themselves in their walk. And put a tzedakah box in your house. Don't just teach your kids, you need to find charity. Give charity to somebody. We put a box in our house that sat on a shelf, and when we had extra money, sometimes we put our tithe in there. There were ministries and there were people that we supported with our money, sure. But then there was just extra money. But that's God's portion. So I'd set it aside. Put it in that box. Put it in that thing. You know what? The guy down the street, you know, his transmission goes out. He doesn't have any money to fix his transmission. You know? It's God's work if you open that box and you help pay to get him back on the road so he can go back to work and feed his family. Don't tell me that's not given to God. You know? Support your community. Help people. Help one another. That takes finances sometimes. It's kind of funny how people, oh, I'll help you. Just don't ask me to give them any money. You know? I'll come and help them shingle a roof. I'll come help them paint. I don't want to give them a dollar. You kidding? I send that off to this thing that feeds children in Africa. That's a good thing. Children in Africa need to eat. But children in Kansas need to eat too. You know? And people need to be take care of their own community first. And that's something we don't do. All right. The last and final thing that I can say to you before we take some questions is remember that children don't expect you to be perfect. They don't. But they do expect you to love them unconditionally. Okay? That love shouldn't be conditional on their obedience or if they do this or that. My children know when I'm disappointed in them. I didn't have to spank my children after they reached a certain level. But because I could just put the, I'm disappointed in you. You know, that works. Okay? But they also know that I love them. There isn't anything I wouldn't do for any of them within my power. There's times I can't do everything they need. You know, that's okay too. And remember this one last final important fact. They're more likely to do what you do than to do what you say. Okay? So don't say a different standard than what you actually live out. It's not going to work anyways. It's just hot air. Sounds good. I know a lot of people that sound good. Their lives are a wreck and their family's a mess. And their kids are just lacking. Don't do that to your own kids. Remember, it doesn't matter what everybody else thinks about you if you don't have honor in your own home. Abraham is not amazing in that book, and we don't call ourselves the seed of Abraham because of what the king of Elam thought of him. He didn't write that book. Abraham Avinu, Abraham our father Abraham. Why? Because he was great within his own house. Be a king, a priest, be a leader in your own house. Everything else take care of itself. Okay. That's it. We've got, a couple minutes maybe? None. We're done.